This is Start the Day, Start Your Day, the Torah Way, Northwest London, Friday the 15th of May, Chaf Aleph Iyar, Tavshin Pei, Rabbi Pinchas Hakenbroch, Parsha theme. We're going to try again. Okay, I'd like to dedicate the learning this morning, the Ilo Nishmas Leah Bas Chana, Leah Bas Bible. This morning I'd like to speak to you about the klolos, the curses with the blessings, the brochas and the klolos in Parshas Bechukosai. So can start in Bechukosai Teilechu Ve'etz Mitzvosai Tishmoru Ve'asisem Oisam, that if we follow the ways of the Rabbeinu Shlalom, the ways of the Torah, we keep the mitzvahs, then we will be blessed V'nasati Gishmech and the Itom, then you're going to have a bountiful rain in the right season, Nasna Haaretz Yavula, and there'll be tremendous plentifulness, there'll be food, and you won't go short. But the Torah goes on, as we all know, but if you don't listen to me, and you don't do all these mitzvahs, the Torah goes on to tell us that if we find the Torah, the Chukim, despicable, right, we reject them, then all the klolos are going to come on us. Right? So that's one thing that it says, that it's going to be timasu, it's going to be, we're going to reject the Yiddishkeit and the mitzvahs. But the Torah goes on to say in the further on in the Psukim, Ve'im selchu imi keri, that if you don't listen to me and you and the Torah, you make the mitzvahs in the way of keri. Keri means, Rashi says, happenstance. You're keeping Shabbos when it suits you. You're not consistent. It's a matter of convenience. And therefore, although you are serving the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's called keri. Right? So, that in itself will lead to the klolos. So we have a contradiction in the psukim. On the one hand, we're being told that why do the klolos come on us? Because we reject, we spurn the Yiddishkeit, the mitzvahs, the Torah. That's on the one hand, and that leads to the klolos. On the other hand, we're being told straight afterwards that it's because the way that we served the Ribbono Shel Olam was because it was keri, it was inconsistent, it was a matter of Yiddishkeit for convenience. When it suited us, then we did the Torah, then we learnt Torah, then we did the mitzvahs. So the question is, we have a contradiction. What brought the klolos on? What brought the curses on? Was it timasu, a rejection of Yiddishkeit? Or was it a matter of it being inconsistent in the way that we carried out our avodas Hashem, in the way that we performed mitzvahs? The second question, which we can ask on this parasha, comes from the Balaturim. The Balaturim says that there are two psukim prior to Parshas Bechukosai, which speaks of Shabbos and Avodah Zorah. Lastly, in the previous parasha, it discusses about Avodah Zorah and Shabbos, before the brachos and klalos. And those two parashas, those psukim dealing with Avodah Zorah and Shabbos, are juxtaposed to our parasha, implying that the keeping of Shabbos and the transgressing, being Oiva and Avodah Zorah, seem to be comparable, he says, to keeping the whole Torah. He says, Samach im bechukosai leShabbos vaAvodah Zorah, loima sheshekulim heim kechol haMitzvos vaChukim. And the obvious question is, how can we say that keeping Shabbos or not doing Avodah Zorah is comparable to the keeping whole Torah, and if we do so, then we're going to get all the brachas? What is the comparison that the Balaturim is making? And to answer this, we turn to the Ishbitzer, and who comes up with a phenomenal, but rather cryptic and rather short explanation. The Ishbitzer says as follows. He says in Me'a Shaloach that right after the brachas and the klolos, the Torah begins by telling us the halachas of Erchin. The general idea we may be familiar with of Erchin is the idea that Erchin means a value of something, and the idea is that we are able to be paid or able to redeem something that you've either donated to the base, you've donated it to the base of Migdash, and therefore you change your mind and now you want it back. You get, for example, you decided to designate your home or possessions, and then you decide that you want to be poida, you want to redeem them. So it's an ability. Pidyon comes hot on the heels. This parsha of Erechin, which is dealing with pidyon, comes hot on the heels right after the brachas and the klolos, and it's telling us, the question is, what is the connection? Seemingly, the parshas are connected, and Erechin, pidyon, must be a way out, an answer to the klolos. And the question is, what possible connection can there be in the getting something back and being able to poide something to the brachas and to the klalas? So he says, this is the Ishbitzer, he says, Acha parshas ha-toichacha, after the parsha of the toichacha, Nosan Hashem Yisparach Mitach Oiz Yisrael. The Rebbein Shem gives us something, he wants to give us confidence, he wants to give us consolation, that although the klalas are a terrible thing, right? He's telling us that you're going to be able, the Bereishis is telling us, you're going to be able to get through the klolos. And a way out of these klolos is that, and of the situation that you're in, is to recognize that there's always a pidyon. There's always a way out of whatever situation you're in. A yid, a Jew, is never truly stuck. Whatever situation that a person finds themselves in, there's always a way out. And therefore, he says, pidyon is written next to it, and it's a hint that there's always a way out. He says, "V'nimsa." Where is it? He says, "V'nimsa b'parshas Erechin, lamud gimel psukim keneged parshas toichacha sheish ba gam kei lamud gimel psukim." Says the Ishbitzer, a phenomenal idea. There are 33 psukim in the toichacha. There are 33 psukim in the parsha of Erechin. And therefore, this parsha, the psukim are zeh keneged zeh. And therefore, there is a parallel and they correlate. And therefore, he says that, it must be that each of the psukim, right, we are able to find in the parsha of Erechin, something to counter the ill effects of it. So therefore, the consolation for us in this rather cryptic parsha of written by the Meshaloach, it would be that if we are able to find the worst of the klolos, if we find the worst of the klolos, and we are able to find the answer of where is the pidyon, where in the parsha of Erechin is there the parallel posuk to that is the answer to it, then that will be a source of consolation. If Parshas Erechin will then be a source of consolation. If we see the very worst case scenario, and we are able to see that even in the worst case, we are able to see our way out of that, because there is a pidyon, there is a redemption, there's a way out, we're not stuck, then that will be a source of consolation, and that will give us the confidence and the support that we will need in order to get through whatever we are going through. So therefore, if we have a look at the worst of the klolos, which is the worst of the klolos, now I may have thought to have to reach a state of deprivation where I end up chas v'shalom eating my own children, devouring my own children, is a terrible thing. But in fact, we find in Gemara Makos Chof Dalet that the worst of the klolos is as follows. Rav says, Amar Rav, Mr. Finim Haikra, the posuk which is the one we should be most afraid of, is va'avadetem bagoyim v'achale eschem be'eretz oyveichem, that you are meant to be afraid of the fact that you are going to be in a situation where you are going to be lost to the goyim. You're going to be lost to your enemies. They're going to devour you. They're going to eat you up. Right? You're going to be eliminated. That is the worst of the klolos. Right? The land is going to devour you up, and your enemies are going to conquer you. You're going to be lost to your enemies. So what exactly does this mean? So the Meir Shiloach says, the Ishbitzer says, he says that what's the parallel posuk to this terrible klala, right? Remember, we're trying to find the worst of the klalas, which we've now identified through Makkos. The worst of the klalas is that we are going to be conquered, eliminated, devoured by the land, and conquered by the enemies, right? that what is the parallel to that in Parshas Erechin, which will then show us the way out of all of this. So v'neged posak v'ibatim b'goyim shehu gadoila yirinoim noima posak v'chol erechacha yeh b'shekel ha-kodesh estrim geira ha-shekel. He says that the posak that parallels this terrible klala is the fact that we will have this money, this shekel ha-kodesh, which we are able to redeem, we are able to use for redemption, so the money that we are meant to use for pidyon is the shekel ha-kodesh, and he says, and that, what does that equal? That equals esrim geira, and that is the consolation, that is the whole consolation that the Meshulach says, that despite the fact that you're thrown amongst all the nations of the world, and that you're consumed by your enemies, yet the fact that you have this shekel HaKodesh that can be paid to you, which is worth Estrim Geira, 20 Geira, that is the pigeon, and that is the consolation. And the answer to the question is baffling, it's obvious. Where is the consolation? Where are we going to find any type of comfort and support? Just the fact that there is this posuk from Erechin, which speaks about a shekel HaKodesh Esrim Geira. So let me digress slightly and share with you an approach of Rav Yossi Zakultinsky, and perhaps with this we can answer the questions that we have and be able to explain and find a consolation, find comfort, that whatever we are going through, despite the darkest times, desperate times that people are living through, the klolos, and we can relate to this in the current climate that we find ourselves in. For many that are on their own, it's exceptionally dark and exceptionally fearful. Yet, there is always a way out. There is always a sense of consolation of pidyon. So let's have a look. So what is it, the question we may ask ourselves, what is it that makes a person in a state of golus? What makes us? How do we know if a person is in golus? So it's not about, Rav Nachman of Breslov says in Likutei Maharan, it's not about a place, but rather, he says, whether we are in Golus or not in Golus is not dependent on location, but rather it's dependent on our state of mind. Now you may think that's rather strange, because the association that we all have when it comes to Golus is that we leave where we are, and we leave Eretz Yisrael, we leave Israel, and we end up being banished from, going into exile, going in chains into Bavel, and going into Mitzrayim, right, ending up in Mitzrayim, and so on. But that's not necessarily the case. And the proof is that consider the Golus of Yavon, of Greece, right? It was a darkness, it was a terrible exile that we endured, and yet we find that we were still living in very much, we were still in Eretz Yisrael. We still lived in Eretz Yisrael, and we find that there was still a Beis HaMikdash. So you may ask yourself, what type of golus is that, right? So this is what the Rav Nachman is saying, that it's all about the mindset. If a person feels abandoned, if a person feels alone, if a person feels that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not with him, then he is in golus. A person could be in the Beis HaMikdash. A person could be in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. And yet, if he's got a mindset that he's alone, that Ribbono Shel Olam is not with him, then he can be in Golus even when there's a Beis HaMikdash, because he feels abandoned. Conversely, says Rav Nachman, a person can be in anywhere in the world. A person can be in London. A person can be in New York. A person can be in Melbourne. And yet, despite the fact that he's very far from the Beis HaMikdash, very far from Yerushalayim, from Eretz HaKodesh, and yet he is living with the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then he already has some of the energy of redemption. He's got the energy of redemption, he's got the right mindset, and therefore, despite the fact that physically he's in Golus, he is in somewhat lesser, he's not in a deep Golus, because his mindset is already in a different place. So what is it that we are meant to feel? What is this mindset that we are meant to have, that we just heard of Rav Nachman of Breslov says is the right mindset that we are meant to have, that ensures that we're not in deep golus, right? That despite the fact that we're in London now, we can ensure that we are edging our way out of golus. So I want to share with you something from Heichal Bracha. Heichal Bracha was written by the Commander Rebbe in his Hakdama to the Megillas Esther. He says something phenomenal. He says as follows, that Im Yoda Adam, Im Yeda Adam Be'emuna Gedola, She'alufa Shel Olam, if a person knew with complete faith that She'alufa Shel Olam, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, is B'chol Tanua, is with him, every move that he makes, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is with you. He's not merely watching you, he's with you in every single move that you make. Right? Miyad yisparadu kol polei aven. Then he says, all the pain and evil that we are experiencing would disappear. The darkness would disappear. A person would feel the light. He says, ki ein shum metzias bilti Hashem yisparach. A person has to know that there is no metzias except for the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Afilu b'shas adin, even at the most harshest time, the darkest period in a person's life when they're going through such terrible ordeals, such traumas, such hardships. Of the im yada she alufa shel olam mistase sham miyad nimtuku adinim niskale ha'or. A person, when they recognize and they sense palpably that Rabbeinu Shel Olam was with them, they feel it, they know the Rabbeinu, they're not alone, then that gives light. That faith brings, that emunah brings the light, and that light is able to be nurtured and to develop and to extend in the course of that pain that he's going through. And therefore, it's about knowing, yes, I'm going through tremendous sorrow, but there is a spark of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam that is with me. He's experiencing the pain with me. Right? It's not that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is up in Shemayim and he's looking with binoculars down at us. He is with us. If you imagine that you've got your, a person is stuck in prison, and the warden of the prison comes into the prison door, right? And he's got the keys on him, and he's sitting next to you whilst you're in prison. A person wouldn't feel so bad. He knows that the pigeon is with him. He knows that he's not alone. And that would lighten the darkness of the whatever ordeal he's going through and the gullus that he's experiencing. So it's a deep sense that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is with you, and he's suffering along with you. And therefore, conversely, real gullus will begin when a person's mind thinks and his heart feels that there's a period, there's a separation, if we feel that Rabbeinu Shel Olam is very distant from us. So let's carry on. So the Divrei Sofrim, Rav Tzadok, explains that there are in fact two types of redemptions that we can experience in our lives. There is Pesach and there is Purim. Pesach, we're all familiar with, is a total, complete redemption. Right? That's true nationally, but it's also true individually. Individually, a person finds themselves in quicksand, and Rabbeinu Shel Olam can pluck a person out, as he did with Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim. And therefore, for this very reason, that is why that we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim every day of our lives. Because it is so that we can tap into the energy of this geula, of this redemption, right? From the place that we don't want to be to the place that we want to be, and therefore we are able to fix the problem. Okay, there is a second type of redemption, of geula, and that is more of a passive, it's called the feminine redemption, in that, whereas the first type, imagine if a child, for example, were in trouble at school, so the parent instantly, you know, let's say a father may want to pick up the phone or go and see the menahel, so that they can sort the problem. But there is a second type of redemption which is also helpful. What is that? That is where a person is going through a sorrow, is going through an ordeal, a pain, and somebody is just there to comfort them. The mother is there when the child comes home and has had such a tough time, and the manael is in trouble with the manael, and the mother doesn't solve the problem. The manael, the mother listens to the problem, and she's imoinoki b'tzara, she feels the pain, she hugs the child, so the child feels comforted. the child feels supported. That is a second type of redemption, says Rav Tzadok HaKohen. It's not that the pain disappears. It's not that the person is redeemed, that they're out of the situation. They're still in the darkness. They're still in the same situation. And yet, the pain that they are enduring is somewhat lessened. It's somewhat, there's a greater degree of light because they feel that and they know that they are not on their own. And therefore, that is why we find that Purim and Pesach have to be juxtaposed. They're only a month apart. That is why we've got two, he says that why we have two, we have two Adars. Purim has to be next to Pesach because Purim leads to Pesach. It's when we are able to recognize in our lives that when we're going through something, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is with us, that we're not alone, that he's experiencing the Torah with us, that causes the light that we have inside us to grow, and the redemption, the mistake that we make is that we believe it comes from on high down here, it comes from the outside in, and he says it's the exact opposite. It starts from within, it starts from that belief in Adar Emuna, in the Ribbono Shel Olam, in the fact that he's with us, in the fact that we are going to come out of this, in the fact that the answer is right in front of our noses. Once we do that, then from Purim, we know that it's a gradual process where the light grows and the redemption occurs, and we go from Purim to Pesach. We go to the ultimate redemption. Okay, so therefore, if we move on from this, we come to the idea, let's try and tie it back to what we were saying originally. So you may recall we spoke about, the Gemara said that the harshest, the most difficult of the curses, v'ibadtem goyim, right? Why is it, we ask, why is that such a terrible klala to know that you're going to be lost to the goyim, right? You're going to feel lost to the goyim. Why is it that eating your own children would seem to be a far greater curse? And the Ishbitzer explains that, in fact, all the tzoras, all the hardships that we go through, we may go through terrible things, and they are all harsh experiences, but they in themselves don't make you in a state of golus. As long as a person believes that the Ribbono Shel Olam is with you in the prison, in the golus, then you are not feeling lost. When a person feels in any given situation that they are lost, they have been abandoned, that's when they are considered in golus. And therefore, the harshest of the klolos is v'ibadtem goyim, when a person feels that they're abandoned, that they're lost, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not with them. That was the worst of the klolos that a person can experience. Now, we know with Hashavas Aveda that there is this idea of that if an object, we have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, and that is when it's in a public area, that is when there is a siman on it. As long as there is that siman on it, then we do not give up hope. The owner knows that there is a siman on it, and therefore he believes that there is always a chance of getting that object back. The owner, in fact, still feels a connection, an association with that object that he has lost. He still feels that it is connected and that there's a chance that he's going to get it back. And therefore, the idea is that Yisroel, Klal Yisroel, are never truly lost because we have a siman on us. What is the siman that we have? If you look at the middle letters of Yisroel, we find an Aleph and a Lamed, Kel, which is the Ribbono Shel Olam's name. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam placed a siman on Klal Yisroel, that he is a part of us, and therefore he's never going to give up hope on us. We are always connected to him. We're never lost, never abandoned. The Ribbono Shel Olam is always with us. And because we have the siman, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is living amongst us, it's just a matter of us having this awareness, this recognition that the Ribbono Shel Olam is with us, that will ensure that we are able to redeem ourselves from any situation. Says the Ishbitzer, and for that very reason, that is why the pasuk that parallels this abandonness that we feel in the klolos, the parallel pasuk to being abandoned is what? Is that you're going to be able to be redeemed. What with? Shekel HaKodesh, which is what? Esrim Geira, 20 Geira. 20 Geira says the Ishbitzer, there's a 10 and there's a 10. We know 10 is a sign of wholeness, right? Aseres Adibros, 10 is a sign of a person being whole, right? And therefore, why is it 20? Because a person is 10 and the Ribbon Shloilam is 10. When you are 10 and 10, then you are truly whole. You are 20 Geira with the Ribbon Shloilam. You are truly whole. The Ribbon Shloilam is with the Klal Yisrael. And therefore, wherever we go, right, the person may think he's on his own, but he has to recognize that that pigeon, that redemption, the way, there is always a way out because you're never on your own. You're always Esrim Geira. The Ribbon Shloilam is always with you. And in fact, we find that there is a, and with this we'll conclude. We're short of time, so I'm going to skip a bit. So if we go back to the beginning, so we mentioned the fact that there was this a seeming stira, this contradiction in the klalos. On the one hand, it says ves mitzvot dimasu. It mentioned the fact that we spurn, that we reject the mitzvahs. That's what brings on the klalos, right? A rejection of Yiddishkeit, a rejection of the mitzvahs, right? And afterwards, it says imtelchu imi keri, that if you have this idea of leading a life of convenience, where you only do mitzvahs, it's by coincidence, it's happenstance, it's when it suits me. We said it seems a complete contradiction. On the one hand, it seems an out-and-out rejection of the mitzvahs. On the other hand, you do the mitzvahs, you just don't do them consistently, you do it when it suits. But the answer is that keri, that the mitzvositis masu, it doesn't actually mean a total rejection. What it means, in the Sforim say, that it means that mitzvahs are being done, rather it means that I see the mitzvahs when I am doing them as I'm doing the mitzvahs, it's just me, right? It's just a physical act, a human act that I am doing. And therefore, keri is explained by the Rav Tzadok and others. He says as follows, keri is that it's not just a matter of coincidence, it's something which is inherently temporary, right? The only thing that we know in the whole of this universe that is not inherently temporary is the Ribbon Shloilam himself. So he says, Rav Tzadok says beautifully, that any time a person does a mitzvah without an awareness that the Ribbon Shloilam is with you, then that makes it a human act. It's only a human act. And therefore, by definition, if we turn mitzvahs into merely human acts, it by definition, it's something temporary, something transient, something that doesn't have a cum, right? And therefore, for that reason, Shabbos precedes the parsha of the brachos and the klolos, because the reason why, of all the mitzvahs, the unique aspect of Shabbos, the reason why we do Shabbos is because the Ribbon Shloilam did Shabbos. And therefore, the only reason we do it is because the Ribbon Shloilam himself did Shabbos, rested. And therefore, it is hinting to the fact, in b'chukoi saitelecho v'smitzvoi saitishmoru, if we reject the Ribbon Shloilam's mitzvahs, and we see them merely as human acts, then the Ribbon Shloilam, and that we just see him as being he's in heaven and I'm on earth. He's watching us from above and I'm doing what I want. I'm doing human acts. I'm the one who's doing the mitzvahs. Then there's no permanence. But if it is that I turn it on its head, every single mitzvah, every act that I do, I realize that it's not me. I'm just a partner in this. The Ribbon Shloilam is with me. Then it's got kiyum. Then it's got permanence, right? And therefore, that human act doesn't become repulsive, timasu, it doesn't become keri, temporary, but it becomes something which is eternal, which is hinted to in the idea of Shabbos and Avodah Zorah, the idea of keeping Shabbos because of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and conversely, Avodah Zorah, which is doing something not for the Ribbono Shel Olam. So in short, to summarize, because we are very short of time, we're over time, the answer is that the whole problem, the whole the issue when it comes to the klolos, which led us down the slippery slope of the klolos, was the fact that we did things without the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that we thought that we were doing those acts of mitzvahs, and therefore it becomes something despicable in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam, something that was coincidental, that was temporary, that was transient, because we didn't do it with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're not living a life with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, clearly, the pigeon, the answer, the antidote to this issue and any ordeal that we're going down is to recognize Esrim Geira. Esrim Geira means the Veshekel HaKodesh. The idea is that it's never you alone, that you are with the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're with the Ribbono Shel Olam when you're doing mitzvahs. You're with the Ribbono Shel Olam when you are in a difficult situation. Whatever situation, whatever we are going through, whatever we are doing, whatever acts we're involved with, the Ribbono Shel Olam is with us. And therefore we conclude and we say, Be'ezras Hashem, we're living through such difficult, challenging times. People are struggling and suffering tremendously. But we should recognize that the Nechama, the source of comfort, consolation and support that we have, is from the Klalas themselves, from the Erechin, the Pasha afterwards, that we know that as long as we allow the Ribbono Shel Olam into our lives, he'll be a part of our lives, and he'll carry us all the way through, as Bias Goel Tzedek, Amen. Wishing everyone a good Shabbos.